The determination of this particular arachnid, and even though I had been partaking from this particular bottle, I thought it was wise to leave it for the spider.
Keep them dreams ablaze and be forever. yet if hope has flown away, in a night or in a day, in a vision or in none, is it therefore the less gone? All that we see or seem is but a dream within a dream.
I first met Dean Moriarty not long after my wife and I split up. I had just gotten over a serious illness that I won't bother to talk about, except that it had something to do with the miserable, weary split up, my feeling that everything was dead. With the coming of Dean Moriarty began the part of my life you could call my life on the road. Before that, I had often dreamed of going west to see the country, always vaguely planning and never taking off. Dean is the perfect guy for the road because he was actually born on the road when his parents were passing through Salt Lake City in 1926 in a jalopy on their way to Los Angeles. First reports of him came to me through Chad King, who'd shown me a few letters from him written in a New Mexico reform school. I was tremendously interested in the letters because they so naively sweetly asked Chad to teach him all about Nietzsche and all the wonderful intellectual things that Chad would like.
It was a beautiful sunny day, and I was northbound on the 110 freeway in Los Angeles, California. I was still south of downtown. It was noonish. The sun was out. Traffic was light. I was feeling pretty good. I was on my way to see a friend who lived just north of downtown. I'd had my sunroof open prior to being on the freeway, but then it got too loud, so I had hand cranked it shut. And I turned up the music, and I was just sort of enjoying the ride. When up ahead, I saw an object, a small dark object, come flying from behind one of those big retaining walls that they put up between the freeway traffic and the houses, the residential areas right alongside it. And this object, this dark spinning object, went high into the air. It was so high up, and I was speeding towards it at about 70 miles an hour, and it was arcing in such a way that just for a moment, because our destinies were entwined, I caught it for a moment where it looked like it had stopped and it was just hovering up there in the air. But no, in fact, it was coming down like a meteorite, and I was speeding towards it like my own sort of meteorite. And as we're approaching one another, I caught a glimpse of it a little more close up just before it struck the roof of my car. I saw it was half of a brick, a red brick, and it was coming down, and it hit the top of my car with this tremendous bang, and it hit right where the sunroof was. And later, when I stopped at my friend's home, I'd inspect the damage, and it was about a 10-inch groove just routed out in the top of my sunroof, right about where my head would have been.
The brick
life
of destiny.
Life is but a dream.
Sometimes misses its mark.
A dream. Life is but a dream. Life is but a dream.
My mother used to say to me, "Oh boy, there is no doubt in this life that they like to call a game. You have to play your feelers out." My mother used to say to me, "Oh boy, there is no doubt in this life that they like to call a game. You have to play."
The people were indicating a very long and extremely narrow tube that was made out of an inflexible material and filled with concrete and random jagged pieces of steel. Through this tube was fed a
rather heavy cable, which was attached to a machine on the other side. I was told that I would have to hold on to this cable, and that the machine would pull it through the tube rather quickly, and I was not expected to survive. I took some measure of comfort, thinking that my head would strike the tube early in the process.
Los Angeles the next day. The city was the same, but I was afraid. The streets lurked with danger. The tall buildings forming black canyons were traps to kill you. When the earth shook, the pavement might open. The streetcars might topple. Something had happened to Arturo Bandini. He walked the streets of one-story buildings. He clung to the curbstone, away from the overhanging neon beyond signs. It was inside me deeply. I could not shake it. I saw men walking through deep, dark alleys. I marveled at their madness. I crossed Hill Street and breathed easier when I entered Pershing Square. No tall buildings.
So I'd come down from the top of the hill where I lived, and I'd taken some back stairs that probably no one knows exists. They're so old and weird. And I came down and I walked across a couple streets, and I went across a parking lot. I went into the big grocery store. I was looking for some Drano because the sink in my bathroom was clogged. The period of time had been terrible. I'd lost my job, my girlfriend. I'd just come through some riots. I'd just come through some fires, a major earthquake, and things were looking bad, and now my drain was clogged, and it just felt like too much. It felt like too much. And so I went in and I grabbed the Drano inside the supermarket, and I turned and I stalked my way towards the register, and I saw a display of beer, and I grabbed a 40 of cheap beer, and I said, tonight I'm going to drink a cheap 40 of beer, and I'm going to watch my drain get unclogged, and that's it. That's my big night. I'm going to do it. So I go to the register, and I'm waiting to pay. And the people in line see what I put down on the little conveyor belt, and they are all starting to wonder if I'm going home with this, with these items to off myself. And they are all taking turns looking me in the eyes, curious what I'm up to and if they can find out what I'm thinking. And what I got the feeling that they weren't looking out of concern for me, but they were looking for answers for themselves, like someone who had just made this momentous decision in their own life might have something really helpful to say to a bunch of strangers before he departs this world, as if I am now just a magic eight ball with a self-destructive bent. So then I get up to the register, and the young woman who's ringing everyone up sees what I'm purchasing, and she says, you should come over to my house and unclog a drain I have. I have other beer. We can have a fun night. And she's flirting with me. She's literally batting her eyelashes. And I'm all, okay, this is all too much. This is all too much. And now I've got to just go because I'm going to the payphone outside. I don't have a phone anymore. So I'm going to the payphone outside to call Mom. I don't remember why. I'm sure it was just a check-in, say I'm alive, because no one can find me if they want to, because I don't have a phone and there's no internet. And so unless they write me a letter or drive out to them to where I live themselves, they're not going to be able to find me. So as I'm sitting there calling Ma, I turn around and I look, and there's a woman leaning in a against a column next to me, or very nearby, and she looks terrible. Her face is baggy, her eyes are baggy. She's staring into the middle distance of the parking lot and the traffic moving down the big boulevard, and I could see, like, she's going through something deep and long, and there's no escape. She looks like she's been crying for years. She's probably 45, and she looks like how I feel on the inside. I'm 25, so my exterior is still a lie, but she's showing it all. And she's drinking from a half-gallon jug of buttermilk. As the local magic eight ball, I knew this couldn't be good. So I rang up Mom, and I was talking to her for a long time, and while I was, I mean, I have no idea what I was saying to her, because I couldn't keep my eyes off this woman who never changed the way she looked out across that parking lot, and she sat there drinking from her buttermilk until it was gone, and then she walked away. And I knew that I'd been a coward. And now here's a song by Nico Case to help dispel everything I've dredged up here.
Driving home, I see those flooded fields. How can people not know what beauty this is? Thank you. and on my guilty feet I follow him in retreat. What purpose in these deeds, oh fox, confessor, please? You married me to these orphan goose. When the death of your civilization precedes you, flooded.